If you wish to become a complete and wise leader, you must embrace a larger view of the Force.
Welcome, everyone. My name is DeVore, and you are listening to episode 42 of A Larger View of the Force, a Star Wars podcast. A reminder, as always, if this is your first time listening, please go back and check out the earlier episodes of this show, and make sure you're subscribed so you keep up to date with new episodes as they come out. Today's episode is, first and foremost, it is a solo episode. It is just me, which has not been the case for a minute. This is actually the first solo episode of 2022 since April, back when I did the third episode in my Book of Boba Fett trilogy of episodes. And then since then, I've just really been fortunate to have a really great run of guests going all the way back to in May. I had Arzu on the show talking about Attack of the Clones. In June, I had Alden Diaz back on the show to talk about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Then in July, I had Kelly Knox on to talk about Obi-Wan Kenobi. And then in August, I had Meg come back to talk about the Phasma novel. And then Eli to talk about Shadow of the Sith. So I am very, very fortunate and grateful to all of those folks for agreeing to come on the show. But yeah. This episode, it is just me, but not for long, because actually the next episode will have not one, but two guests, but I will talk more about that at the end of this episode. And so today's episode is the return of what I once promised was going to be a semi-regular series, and then I kind of dropped the ball because of life, but now it is coming back, and that is Speculative Star Wars. So this is something that I introduced very early on in the show, actually back in 2020, at the very end of 2020, where the idea pretty much is that I'm going to tell the story of a single what-if scenario in the world of Star Wars. And so for today's Speculative Star Wars story, I am looking at the events of Revenge of the Sith once again, just as I did in the second speculative Star Wars story, but this time I am looking at one Jedi Master, Mace Windu, and specifically the events that transpire in the office of Supreme Chancellor Palpatine when he, along with a cadre of other Jedi Masters, goes in to arrest the Chancellor after learning that he is in fact the Dark Lord of the Sith. Now, of course, we know how the events go in the movie, but suppose the duel had gone differently. Suppose that instead of Palpatine and Anakin winning, it was in fact Mace Windu who emerged victorious. How would events in the galaxy for the Jedi and for those involved have unfolded differently in that circumstance? And that is what this story is going to look at. So, without further ado, please enjoy the third speculative Star Wars story, titled The Incorruptible. I am going to end this once and for all. Mace Windu had his amethyst blade pointed at the Chancellor, who lay before him, his features distorted by the volley of Force lightning the Jedi Master had redirected at him. "You can't," protested Anakin Skywalker. Mace's eyes flashed in his direction. Skywalker had come to Mace and informed him that Palpatine was a Sith Lord. And now he was here, in direct violation of Mace's orders, no less, demanding restraint. He, Anakin Skywalker, the same man who had killed Count Dooku aboard the Invisible Hand. Why? He must stand trial. What? What was Skywalker thinking? Putting a Sith Lord on trial? A Sith Lord who also happened to be the Supreme Chancellor? The same Chancellor who had used the Clone Wars to engineer an unprecedented power grab? He has control of the Senate and the courts, Mace reminded the young Jedi Knight. He's too dangerous to be left alive. Palpatine had said the same, almost verbatim, about his former apprentice on the Invisible Hand. Mace didn't know that, of course. But would he have chosen his words differently if he had? I'm too weak, Palpatine moaned melodramatically. Don't kill me, please. It's not the Jedi way, Anakin insisted. Anakin Skywalker, murderer of Count Dooku. He must live. Mace glared at the Chancellor. Skywalker wasn't wrong. Not entirely. As a rule, Jedi didn't kill unarmed combatants. But this was the Dark Lord of the Sith. The man responsible for the Clone Wars. For the deaths of countless Jedi. Mace Windu could forgive himself this transgression. Please don't, Palpatine begged, wide-eyed. I need him, Anakin cried. Need? For what? Mace Windu raised his blade. He didn't care. Please don't! No! In an impulsive flash, Anakin ignited his lightsaber and slashed upward, aiming for Mace's wrist. He missed. Instead of parting the Jedi Master from his hand, his and Mace's blades crashed in midair. Mace had been so fixated on delivering the coup de grace against the Chancellor that Skywalker's abrupt intervention hadn't fully registered. Skywalker was protecting the Chancellor. Protecting the Sith. Palpatine's frailty suddenly evaporated. He fired another torrent of Force lightning at Mace, hoping that the combination of him and Anakin would overwhelm the Jedi Master. The lightning struck the two crossed blades. Mace shifted and pushed off towards Skywalker, directing the lightning his way. Anakin was unprepared. The lightning struck him square in the chest, and he was thrown across the Chancellor's office, slamming into the wall and landing in an unconscious heap on the floor, his lightsaber whirling through the air in an altogether different direction. Until it froze and flew backwards, landing in Mace's other hand. Palpatine, his advantage lost, attacked again. But this time Mace had an even stronger defense. With both blades, he thrust the lightning back at Palpatine, who was struggling to simultaneously reabsorb it and hurl it back at Mace. Mace Windu drew closer, fueled not only by his desire to put an end to Darth Sidious, but also by ire at Skywalker's betrayal. The lightning was starting to overwhelm Palpatine, who was visibly straining, his decrepit teeth clenched. The lightning was gathering into a little ball of energy that hovered in between them, which grew bigger and bigger, and Mace uncrossed the blades. The ball of energy burst, severing the connection between them. Mace had his chance. Before Palpatine could recover for his next offensive, Mace charged him, spun the two blades to the air, and sliced straight through the Chancellor's neck. A look of horror was frozen on Palpatine's face. He sat there, unblinkingly, for a moment, before his body fell to its side and his head rolled across the office floor. Mace staggered back. It was done. He, Mace Windu, had killed the Dark Lord of the Sith. And with Anakin having dispatched Count Dooku days earlier, was that it? Were the Sith gone for good? He couldn't be too sure. The Jedi had, after all, believed that the Sith went extinct a millennia prior, and that turned out to be wrong. Anyone at any point could rise up to try and reclaim their mantle. No doubt there were various Sith agents scattered throughout the galaxy. But for now, yes, perhaps he could breathe a sigh of relief and savor the victory. But that's not who Mace Windu was. Instead, a million things were zipping through his brain at once, from the unconscious Anakin Skywalker to the countless implications of the Chancellor's assassination. The Sith threat may have been extinguished, but the Clone Wars were still raging. The Jedi were still in danger. The Republic was still in danger. Mace had no way of knowing what kind of contingency plans Palpatine might have put in place in the event of his untimely death. At their last meeting, the Jedi Council had entertained the possibility that the Jedi might have to take control of the Senate, but their conversation never went further than that. Where would they start? Mace considered Anakin's lightsaber for a moment before tossing it out of the window of the Chancellor's office. The boy wouldn't be needing it anymore. He then walked over to where Anakin lay. He couldn't help but feel a certain measure of vindication. He had opposed Skywalker's training from the beginning, sensed that there was too much fear in the boy, bristled at his repeated displays of arrogance and entitlement as he grew from Padawan to Jedi Knight, mistrusted his close relationship to the Chancellor. And now we have the ultimate proof of Skywalker's unfitness. Mace Windu had an ability uncommon even among Jedi. He could sense shatter points, These were individuals, decisions, actions that represented inflection points. Like the first domino that struck and causes the ones lined up in front of it to fall, these shatter points could set off a chain of events that had the potential to alter the course of the entire galaxy. Mace had sensed that Anakin was a shatter point when he told Mace the truth about Palpatine. And indeed, Anakin had very nearly set the galaxy in a new direction. But he hadn't. Mace had stopped him. What was it then that Mace had sensed in him? Perhaps Mace had misinterpreted his own intuitions. Mace would have to figure that out later. He had bigger priorities right now. He took out his holoprojector, intending to call Razor, the clone commander of Lightning Squadron. He had ascended to the post following the death of Commander Pons at the hands of Boba Fett. Mace hesitated. Sidious had masterminded not just the Clone Wars, but the creation of the Grand Army of the Republic. No doubt the clones figured some way into his grand plan. Could they still be trusted? What if they were the contingency? Unfortunately, the Clone Army had become so embedded into the architecture of the Galactic Republic that Mace had no choice but to trust them, albeit wearily. The next steps could not be completed without them. The tiny figure of Razor appeared on Mace's holoprojector. "General Windu," he said, standing very straight and looking up. "Commander Razor, I want you to take a detachment of your best men and arrest Vice Chair Masamita and Chief of Staff Sly Moore at once." Though his helmet obscured his expression, Mace could infer Razor's confusion from his rather pregnant pause. "Sir?" "The Supreme Chancellor has committed treason against the Republic," Mace explained. "I can't go into all the details right now. Suffice it to say that he has been removed from power, and the Jedi Council has assumed temporary control of the Republic. It is imperative that we immediately detain anyone and everyone who may have been an accomplice in the Chancellor's betrayal, and release them only when we can be sure of their loyalty. You must get to Amida and Moore before they learn what's happened. Understood?" "Yes. Yes, sir." Mace could hear the uncertainty and hesitation in Razor's voice, and frankly, he didn't blame him. "We will also need to put the Senate and the Jedi Temple under lockdown," he continued. "No one gets inside either without prior authorization from me. Get in touch with Commander Thyer and see that he gets it done." "And Commander," Mace added, "I would advise you to keep this on a need-to-know basis. Control of information is crucial at this time." "Yes, sir. Need to know." He repeated the instruction, that apprehension still very much present in his voice. "I will report back when we have the Chancellor's aides." At that, he disappeared. Amida and Moore were only the start. They had been closest to Palpatine. They almost certainly knew his true identity. But there were many more who had aided and abetted Palpatine's accumulation of power, who owed their status to his favor. They represented their own kind of threat. Mace returned to Palpatine's private office, where their confrontation had begun. He forced himself to look upon the slain bodies of Masters Kit Fisto, Sacy Tin, and Agent Kolar. They had been among the Jedi Order's finest. Mace had been particularly fond of the Noddle and Kit Fisto, considering him one of his closest friends. Their deaths were not for want of skill in the Force or with a lightsaber. Even Mace had barely made it out with his life. They should never have been put in this situation. Palpatine may have dealt the death blows, but it was the Jedi Order who had made it possible. Time and again they had missed the signs, covered up inconvenient truths, failed to dig deeper when the facts didn't add up. This was much bigger than Palpatine's machinations. The Jedi Order had become sclerotic and complacent. And if that went unaddressed, nothing that he or anyone else did would matter much. Mace used the Chancellor's channel to contact Grandmaster Yoda. "Master Windu," he said by way of greeting. "A surprise this is. Expecting the Chancellor, I was." "I'm sure you were," Mace responded in curt fashion. "I take it the offensive on Kashyyyk is going well?" "Engaged the enemy we have." Yoda's eyes narrowed. He could tell that something was amiss. Mace Windu was calling from the Chancellor's office, after all. This wasn't just a casual check-in. "A shift, I sense. Not only in the Force, but in you, too." "Indeed," Mace replied, his even tone belying the gravity of the situation. He cut to the chase. "Chancellor Palpatine revealed himself to be a Sith Lord. And not just any Sith Lord. The Sith Lord, Darth Sidious, the mastermind of the Clone Wars." Yoda gripped his gimmer stick a little tighter. escaped, he has? No. We fought and I defeated him. The Chancellor is dead. The Sith have been decapitated, but not without a cost. Mace stepped to the side, allowing Yoda to see the dead Jedi Masters. There's more, Mace continued, denying Yoda the opportunity to register his grief. Anakin Skywalker intervened and attempted to protect the Chancellor, despite knowing his true identity. He was ready to kill me if he had to. He's still alive, but incapacitated. Yoda was no longer looking directly at Mace. He was staring down instead, his eyes flickering, clearly having some difficulty processing these events. Mace pressed on to what he knew would be the most difficult part of the conversation. You have served the Jedi Order with distinction for many centuries. You have been a model to many, myself included. But I think it is time that your tenure as Grand Master come to an end. This snapped Yoda back into focus, into the here and now. Step down, you wish me to? The Jedi have an unprecedented task ahead of them, Mace explained by way of answering his question. We have long held an important, albeit undefined, position within the political apparatus of the Republic. But now we must lead that government through one of its most turbulent periods. The truth of Palpatine will sow distrust in the Senate, in the Republic, in democracy itself. If the situation is not managed properly, we might face a civil war orders of magnitudes worse than the Clone Wars. Only the Jedi can steer the ship of state at this hour, and in so doing, restore faith in the Senate. But we can only do that if we have a new face. Your contributions to the Jedi Order cannot be overstated. But as I stand here, mere feet from the bodies of fellow Jedi, I can't help but reflect on how the events of this evening were made possible by certain lapses of judgment on your part. Yoda's ears twitched. Oh? The boy, for one. You sensed his fear as clearly as I did when he was brought before us. You yourself said that his future was clouded. You agreed with me the first time that he shouldn't be trained. But then you allowed Obi-Wan to take him as his apprentice after Qui-Gon's death. In the lead-up to the Battle of Geonosis, I told you that we needed to inform the Senate that our ability to use the Force had diminished, and you overruled me. Because of your decisions, we remained blind while our enemy gathered his strength. Not only that, he was able to use Skywalker to burrow his way into Jedi affairs, to install his very own spy on the Jedi Council. For all we know, he might have already turned Skywalker, and all of this was an elaborate trap. He gestured to the Chancellor's office. Events could have unfolded very differently tonight. And if the Jedi Order is to have any credibility in the eyes of the Republic moving forward, there must be accountability. And that starts at the top. Yoda's eyes narrowed, one brow arching. Bear any responsibility for this, you do not? Agreed with me you did, that the truth of the Clone Army, secret, should be kept. Mace shifted his stance. He should have expected this. Yoda wasn't exactly wrong. I don't hold myself blameless, Mace conceded, and not merely out of courtesy. I certainly have had my shortcomings. But given the present circumstances, I believe that I am in the best position to guide the Jedi and the Republic through this perilous transition. Days ago, I said that we needed to be prepared to move against Palpatine, and your response was to call for restraint. Such an act, destroy the Jedi it could, I believe you said. And look where that got us. The entire Jedi Order could have died tonight. It is clear to me that you lack the resolve needed right now. I have no intention of staying in power permanently. When the work of preserving the Republic is done, I will step down. I see. Mace could tell that Yoda didn't fully believe him. We need not make a scene of it, Mace insisted. The transition gives you a perfectly acceptable pretext for announcing your retirement. People won't ask too many questions. Yoda didn't say anything. Mace could see that he was studying him, perhaps trying to use the Force to discern the truth of his motivations. Master Yoda, please. He tried not to make it sound like he was begging. The galaxy is in a fragile state as it is. Do not add to it by triggering a rift within the Jedi Order. Oh, Yoda purred. Triggering a rift, I will be. I remain firm in my stance, Mace declared. Your resignation is essential if this transition is to succeed. You may take some time to meditate on this, but my position will not change. Yoda gave a solemn nod, a recognition that more conversation wasn't going to change anything. Very well. Meditate, I will. Yoda disappeared. Mace knew he had said that just to end the conversation. Yoda would be as dug in as he was. No doubt Yoda suspected that Mace had ulterior motives, that he was using this crisis to install himself as some sort of dictator. Mace would prove him wrong. Mace really, truly believed in democracy. As he was fond of telling his students, the Jedi did not fight for peace so much as they fought for civilization. For only civilization made peace possible. And democracy was the cornerstone of any civilization worth fighting for. Tonight, the Republic had come the closest it ever had in 1,000 years to losing that democracy. He, Mace Windu, had pulled it back from the precipice. And he, Mace Windu, was going to make sure that that democracy lasted another 1,000 years. He couldn't do it alone. He had to face the fact that Yoda would not go quietly. And indeed, Yoda was so beloved within the Jedi Order that he would not be short of allies, of those who might also question Mace's intentions. Mace would need friends on his side, too. He knew where to start. The fighting on Collar had taken a decisive turn in the Republic's favor when Depa Balaba got the call from her former master. Her Padawan, Caleb Doom, had enlisted the help of Clone Force 99, who swiftly routed the advancing Separatists. The triumphal mood was, however, cut short by Mace's message. She decided to leave Caleb on Collar with the Bad Batch to clean up the remaining Separatists. She didn't want to entangle him in any of this until she knew more. And besides, he didn't really seem to mind. Also, Mace had insisted that she return to Coruscant alone. Depa's Aquamarine Delta 7 starfighter dropped out of hyperspace in Coruscant space, detached from its hyperspace ring, and flew down to the surface. He had instructed her to come not to the Jedi Temple, but to the Senate. His details were sparse, concerned as he was about the possibility that his message might get intercepted. But he said enough for her to understand the severity of the situation, and why he needed her above all others at his side. Jedi weren't supposed to form attachments, but Depa and Mace were perhaps as close to father and daughter as the Order would allow. When Depa was granted the rank of Master and a seat on the Jedi Council, Mace was as proud as any parent would be. That being said, her ascension marked an important shift in their relationship. Whatever dynamic might have existed in their earlier years, they were now equals. Moreover, she was every bit as discerning as he was. She would do what was right, and not simply what someone else, even her former master, told her to do. Depa's starfighter touched down in the Senate's docking bay, not far from where Palpatine had made his return following his kidnapping. She immediately noticed two things. First, the normally bustling docking bay was nearly bereft of vehicles coming or going, despite the fact that it was almost midday. Second, there was a lot of security. Clone troopers were posted everywhere, LAAT gunships whizzed overhead, and AT-RT scout walkers stood at attention. As soon as she exited her craft, a trooper who, from the markings on his armor, she recognized as belonging to Mace's lightning squadron approached her. Where was the Coruscant guard? Stop right there, the trooper barked, holding a hand up. You can't go any further without prior clearance. Before Depa could muster a reply, another clone, who based on a shoulder pauldron was perhaps a captain or a sergeant, noticed the interaction and sprinted over. Stand down, trooper. This is Master Balaba. We have orders from General Windu to let her in as soon as she landed. Oh. He turned sheepishly back to Depa. Apologies, sir. It's... He stepped aside without finishing the thought. Please, this way. Oh my. It was an exclamation unbefitting everything Mace had just told her, but it was all she could muster. Depa found Mace in the Galactic Senate Chamber holding office, the Chancellor's office built directly below the Senate Rotunda. Its provisions were Spartan, consisting only of a single desk and the Chancellor's podium. It was her first time here. The entrance, normally flanked by the Red Guards, was instead manned by clone troopers. Now that they were face to face, Mace told her everything. About Palpatine, about Skywalker, about Yoda. I will be addressing the Senate shortly, Mace announced. Depa's eyes flashed. What? The senators are gathered in the rotunda as we speak, he said. I debated how much I should say, but there's been so much deception that the only solution is for the people to know the truth. The whole truth. There will be outrage, maybe even panic and chaos. But we are prepared. Are you sure it's wise to do this before Master Yoda? Her voice trailed off. She wasn't sure how she wanted to finish that sentence. Deference to Yoda on matters of galactic importance had become almost second nature, even among members of the Jedi Council. But it was no longer clear what position he occupied, what role he played. Yoda is a Jedi matter. Mace seemed to settle on the words as he spoke. This is about the Republic. And what do you want from me in all this? Depa asked. If you expect me to stand on that podium at your side, wielding a scepter like Mass Amita, I must confess that I am uneasy. Mace nodded. For the record, I wasn't going to ask that of you. The Senate I can handle. There's no one in the Jedi Order I trust more than you. There's going to be a lot of resistance to the changes coming. I need you to help me persuade the others that I'm doing the right thing. Depa opened her mouth but said nothing. Assuming you agree that I am doing the right thing. Depa didn't know what to think. This was all too much to take in at once. Her faith in her former master was as strong as his in her. She knew Mace was a good man. He wasn't doing any of this out of a desire for power. And yet something gnawed at her. Though she had done her duty and served as a general on the front, Depa had always opposed the Jedi's transformation from keepers of the peace into soldiers. She'd seen firsthand how the Jedi's drifted to politics and taken them away from their true purpose in the galaxy. However necessary Mace's actions, they didn't feel like a step in the right direction. At the same time, the Republic needed a guiding hand right now. If not the Jedi, if not Mace, then who? Mace turned away. Depa couldn't tell if there was disappointment in his face. I see that you're conflicted. I don't hold it against you. I mean that, he added by way of insistence. Take some time, and whatever you decide, I'm with you. She had decided in that very moment. She'd like to think it happened before the words came tumbling out of her mouth, as though commanded by someone else. But if she were being honest, the words had made the decision for her. Mace leaned forward. Are you sure? I don't want you to feel compelled by our history. Her reservations were sincere, and, she thought, fair. But she trusted Mace with her life. If he believed this was the right course of action, then she did too. Depa nodded. I'm sure. Mace smiled. It wasn't something he did often. Good. Like I said, I will deal with the Senate myself. In the meantime, I have an important job for you. The safety of the Republic depends on uncovering the extent of the Sith conspiracy. Accordingly, I need you to go to Kamino and arrest Prime Minister Lama Su. Depa stepped back. Arrest him? As a precautionary measure. For all we know, he knew nothing about Palpatine's schemes. But that doesn't mean he wasn't unwittingly playing into his hands. Until we can be sure where his true loyalties lie, we cannot have him overseeing the Republic's soldiers. Mace sat straighter. As of this moment, you are second in command of Lightning Squadron. I will notify Commander Razor. You will have their resources at your disposal. Something inside Depa's throat tightened. She swallowed it, gave a short nod, and headed out of the office. Depa. She stopped just in front of the doorway and turned back to her former master. We are going to do great things, he said. You'll see. The buzz inside the Senate was palpable as the Chancellor's podium rose up into the rotunda, and those assembled saw that it wasn't Palpatine or one of his aides. Mace could practically hear the realization traveling up from the lowest rung of pods, practically in tandem with his podium. In lieu of Mass Amita or Sly Moore, Mace had stationed a clone from Lightning Squadron to either side of him. A little excessive, Mace conceded, but he knew that the senators, especially those who had backed Palpatine without reservation, respected one thing above all else. Authority. When the podium reached its natural height, Mace wasted no time. He caught sight of the yellow camera droid whizzing past before he spoke. Esteemed senators and citizens of the Galactic Republic, he began. I am Master Mace Windu of the Jedi Council. You are no doubt asking yourselves why I am here in the Senate addressing you instead of the Supreme Chancellor. I will not mince words. Last night, the Jedi Council learned that Chancellor Palpatine was in fact the Dark Lord of the Sith, Darth Sidious. The murmur that had died down when Mace started speaking picked up again, only now with more agitation. Where is your proof? The shout came from some corner of the Senate. It was impossible to tell which. Heads turned this way and that. There were some unintelligible expressions of surprise. Even in such unprecedented circumstances, it was, apparently, considered a breach of decorum to so boldly interrupt a speaker, especially if you didn't have the decency to detach your pod and make your identity known. Mace smirked. You want proof? A massive hollow of Agent Kolar, CC Tin, and Kit Fisto, lying dead on the floor of the Chancellor's office, filled the center of the rotunda. Is that good enough? A new class attack shuttle broke through the layer of perpetual storm clouds that enveloped the planet of Kamino and headed for Topoka City. Dippa had notified the Kaminoans of her imminent arrival, though she did not specify why. Razor had stayed behind on Coruscant, but his deputy, Stack, accompanied her. The shuttle touched down. As she exited, she could see Lama Su and his aide, Ton Wee, gliding serenely towards her craft, their arms swaying slightly. Two rows of clone troopers stood in formation to greet her. Stack came out after Dippa, along with the contingent of Lightning Squadron troopers she had brought with them. "Master Balaba," Lama Su bowed his head. "An unexpected pleasure. To what do we owe your company?" The attempt to arrest Darth Sidious cost the lives of three Jedi. Mace made a point of not referring to him as Palpatine or the Supreme Chancellor from here on out. And though we had every intention of making Sidious answer for his crimes before the Senate, he proved too powerful. So I, eliminated him. Even more buzzing now. The Senate was now on a razor's edge. "Traitor!" Some gasps now. "Sidious was the traitor," Mace retorted. "Because of the actions the Jedi have taken, the Republic is safe. And we intend to keep it that way." Just then, for the first time since he began, a smattering of applause. A few other senators joined in, buoyed perhaps by learning they were not alone in their sentiments. It was working. "Under arrest? On what grounds?" "Supreme Chancellor Palpatine has been overthrown for committing treason against the Republic," Dippa explained. "She'd rehearse her lines on the trip here. The Jedi have consumed temporary control of the Republic. We are detaining any and all of the individuals who may have been accomplices in the Chancellor's crimes." "I have no idea what you're talking about," Lama Su insisted, stepping back. "I don't know anything about any treason. All I have done is provide the Republic with the army it paid for." "Then let's hope that the evidence bears that out," Dippa replied. "Until then, the Republic will be taking direct control of all Kamino and cloning facilities."
You can't do this." The normally unflappable Kaminoan was losing his composure. "This is Kaminoan property. The labs, the soldiers."
"Prime Minister, you have my word that these are only temporary measures," Dippa assured him. She hoped, anyway. "I appreciate your trepidation, but this is in the best interest of the citizens of the Galactic Republic." Lama Su looked first at Ton Wee, then at the clone troopers, then fixed his gaze on Stack. This was precisely the scenario to which Tyrannus had alluded when he instructed the Kaminoans to install a biochip into the brains of every clone trooper. Insurance, he had said, against rogue Jedi. The Jedi had nearly uncovered this contingency not long ago, following an incident on Ringo Vinda. But Nala Se had helped make sure that they remained in the dark. The Prime Minister had no way of reaching Tyrannus at this very moment to get his approval. But it didn't matter. Lama Su knew what to do. "Commander," he said serenely, "execute Order 66. The Sith conspiracy nearly succeeded. The acoustics of the rotunda made Mace's voice crack like thunder. But although Sidious was its ringleader, he could not have come as close as he did to destroying the Jedi and the Republic alone. All along the way, he was aided and abetted by those who had a vested interest in his personal success. Darth Sidious was merely the face of the real cancer eating away at the Republic. Greed, corruption, disloyalty. Politicians who care only about themselves and not about the good of the Republic. They are as much a danger to the Republic as any Sith Lord. Only an unwavering commitment to liberty, justice, and democracy will protect us from another Sidious." Even more applause now. All the clone troopers in the hangar turned in Dippa's direction and pointed their blasters at her in near-perfect unison, including Stack. Dippa's eyes swept around. "What's going on?" Lama Su and Ton Wee stepped back. The Prime Minister's arms were behind his back, and there was a soft, yet deliciously malevolent grin on his face.
"I'm sorry, Master Jedi."
Stack took one step closer.
"Good soldiers follow orders."
Before he could squeeze his trigger, Dippa's lightsaber ignited as she sliced Stack's blaster in half before force-pushing him across the hangar. The other troopers immediately opened fire. Dippa deflected the bolts and shoved away as many as she could, but it became quickly apparent that sparing them wasn't going to work. The numbers were against her, so against her better instincts,
Deppa began cutting her way through the troopers as cleanly as she could, giving them at least the mercy of a quick death. Lamassu and Tanwi were now sprinting back out of the hangar. She couldn't let them escape. Using the force, she sealed the blast doors, then raised a large crate and threw it at the doorway to further block their path, all the while continuing to repel the onslaught of the clones, who had somehow been turned against her by the uttering of three words. The Jedi, too, have an important part to play. We have been derelict in our duty to the Republic. We are meant to be the guardians of peace and justice in the galaxy. But we have spent the last 2 years on the front lines, away from the beating heart of the Republic. We've been so fixated on the external threat of the Separatists that we have lost sight of the enemies within. No doubt this is exactly what Sidious intended. But that changes now. Yoda will step down as Grand Master. Mace wasn't lying, exactly. Yoda hadn't yet acquiesced to his demand, but Mace would see to it that it was done. And I will take his place as Grand Master. Under my leadership, the Jedi will recommit themselves to their true purpose, and together we will make the Republic stronger than ever. After slaying the last clone trooper, Deppa leapt onto the crate that she had tossed in the path of the fleeing Kaminoans. With the force, she lifted Lamassu off his feet and grabbed him by his lengthy neck. "What did you do?" she hissed. "What I had to," Lamassu answered. "We knew this day might come, so we were prepared." "How?" she tightened her grip on the Prime Minister. "How did you do it? Wouldn't you like to know?" She squeezed tighter. The Kaminoan's body began to twitch, and he coughed as he struggled for air. "A chip," he finally relented. "In their heads. It takes over. All of them. They all have it." "If you are a loyal citizen of the Republic, you have nothing to fear. The Republic will continue to protect your life and your liberty. You are the true citizens of the Republic. The only people who have anything to fear are the enemies of the Republic. We will strike terror into their hearts." The mood of the Senate had lurched dramatically since the start of Mace's address. Now nearly the entire body was on his side, clapping, whooping, stomping at every provocation. Mace maintained his Jedi composure, keeping the emotions of the senators at a distance. "We will use every resource at our disposal to identify and root out the Republic's enemies. We will wage a war against them without hesitation, because that is what democracy demands. But that alone is not enough. We must also renew our commitment to the core values that form the cornerstone of the Republic. Everyone, from citizens to senators, must carry in their hearts and in their minds a love for the Republic and the ideals for which it stands." Deppa released Lamassu, and he fell to his knees. Tanwi helped him stagger back onto his feet. "Your Jedi insurrection ends today," Lamassu declared. "If Palpatine is no longer Supreme Chancellor, then I have no choice but to execute Order 66 in his place. And once the Jedi are out of the picture, the Clone Army will be the institution best positioned to lead the Republic. Temporarily, of course." Deppa just stood there, lightsaber at her side. She could feel her arms and legs trembling. She thought that Supreme Chancellor being a Sith Lord was catastrophe enough. This was so much worse. "With few exceptions, Kaminoans have never had much of an appetite for politics," Lamassu went on. "We are first and foremost scientists. However, in light of these extraordinary circumstances, perhaps we need to consider..." Deppa's blade sliced through Lamassu's slender neck before the Prime Minister even saw her blade coming. His mouth hung open, the remainder of his sentence caught in his throat, forever. His head hit the floor, followed in quick succession by the rest of his body. Tanwi recoiled, looking from the decapitated Prime Minister to Deppa. What have you done?" She had gone too far down the sword to turn back. There was only one move to make. With a swish of her blade, Deppa cut down Tanwi. "Mark my words," Mace Windu concluded. "Democracy will prevail. Justice will prevail. Civilization will prevail." Deppa Balaba was surrounded by bodies. Everything had happened so quickly. The clones, the Kaminoans, they needed to die. They weren't wielding a blaster, but they may as well have. The things Lamassu was talking about. He would have killed every Jedi, then taken over the Republic, a military dictatorship. She needed to stop it, and she had. She, Deppa Balaba, had saved the Jedi Order and the Republic, just as her former master had. Why, then, did she feel unmoored, like she had betrayed everything for which the Republic stood? Was it possible the two were not in fact a contradiction? Perhaps peace and security demanded that some sacrifice their own integrity in the commission of barbarous acts. If the Republic lived another 1,000 years, would anyone care what she had done? Would anyone remember the names Lama Su and Tan Hui, mourn their loss? But what about those who lost themselves in the process? The absolution of history was cold comfort for those who had to walk around with shattered souls. Through the forest, Depa raised the bodies and cast each one of them into Camino's tempestuous seas. Each time before she let go, she paused, letting the body float in midair, closed her eyes, and uttered a small forgiveness. The clones had not wanted this, had no choice in this. She wanted absolution for them, and maybe, also, if the forest willed it, for herself. The evidence of her transgressions gone, she boarded the shuttle that would take her back to her Star Destroyer. She wanted nothing more than to get in touch with Master Yoda, to receive his counsel. He always knew what to say, the right course of action to prescribe. But no, that option was no longer available to her. She had chosen to hitch herself to Mace's destiny, chosen at the moment she decapitated the Prime Minister. Yoda could dispense wisdom, but as a practical matter, there was no way of coming back from this. Only Mace would understand why your actions had been necessary. Yes, he was right. Yoda was incapable of meeting the moment, of adapting to this unprecedented crisis. He needed to go. Anyone who stood in the way needed to go. Believe it or not, Yoda had in fact meditated in the aftermath of his conversation with Mace. Even with almost 900 years under his belt, he had never been in a situation quite like this. He was not as presumptuous as Mace apparently believed him to be. Perhaps it was Yoda's destiny to step aside. The Shroud of the Dark Side had prevented Yoda from seeing so many truths that he was now more cautious about trusting his immediate impressions. Even with Palpatine gone, he needed to make sure he was acting with a clear mind. Then he saw Mace's address to the Senate. Obi-Wan Kenobi stroked his goatee pensively. "What exactly do you have in mind, Master?" He thought back to when he and Qui-Gon had been sent to end the Trade Federation blockade over Naboo. "I don't think bursting into the Chancellor's office is going to help things." Yoda contacted the Jedi Master, who was still on Utapau cleaning up the Separatist presence in the wake of General Grievous's death. Obi-Wan had also watched the speech and was concerned about Mace's provocations, his calls for swift and unflinching retribution against the Republic's internal enemies. With the Republic victory all but assured in their respective battlefields, they concluded that Coruscant needed them more. Yoda smiled wryly and shook his head. "Carefully we must proceed. Enemies we cannot seem. Work with Master Windu we must, to find common ground. I don't think he's all too interested in compromising, least of all with us." Obi-Wan turned and looked out at the swirl of hyperspace that surrounded their Star Destroyer. His eyes flicked this way and that, as though he were searching for something in the distorted field of stars. "Still thinking about Skywalker, you are." Yoda phrased it as a statement rather than a question. "I can't imagine what could have come over him." There was exasperation in Obi-Wan's voice. "I know that he and the Chancellor were close, but once he learned he was a Sith, it seems to me that there was more to their relationship than any of us were aware." Yoda bowed his head in acknowledgement that Obi-Wan might be onto something. "In time, reveal itself, the truth will. But for now, wait, that must." Obi-Wan nodded, albeit with reservation. "Don't let your personal feelings get in the way." He had said that to Anakin back on Geonosis, when Anakin insisted on rescuing Padme at the expense of chasing Count Dooku. Obi-Wan could stand to take his own advice. And besides, they are about to hear from their contact on Coruscant. The glowing, translucent figure of Ahsoka Tano materialized on the holotable. "Ahsoka, what's going on down there?" Obi-Wan asked. "It's hard to be sure," Ahsoka said. "I tried going to the temple after I landed, but because I'm no longer a Jedi, I was denied entrance. The Coruscant guard has taken Maul. Where, I don't know. I've been trying to piece together what I can. Apparently there's been an increased presence of troopers in and around the Senate apartment complex after Master Windu's speech. It's possible they're rounding up senators suspected of helping Palpatine." "Arrive shortly, we will," Yoda said by way of reassurance. "Answers we will get." "Ahsoka." There was a slight break in Obi-Wan's voice. Yoda's words notwithstanding, he couldn't help himself. "Have you heard anything about Anakin?" Ahsoka shook her head. "Someone's working on it, though." Mace sat back. Depa had come straight to the Chancellor's office, where she knew she'd find her former master. And then, with little in the way of prelude, she told him everything that had transpired on Kamino. She was unsparing in detailing her own conduct. "A chip," Mace muttered to himself. "And you say they all have them, according to the Prime Minister." In a perverse way, Mace couldn't help but admire the ingenuity of Palpatine's plan. Entangle the Jedi in a manufactured galactic civil war, then give them an army within which lay the means to wipe out the entire Order in one fell swoop. There was no doubt in Mace's mind that Palpatine would have triggered Order 66 had he emerged victorious in their duel. It was all a setup from the very beginning. The Jedi had stood on the precipice of extinction. And then he, Mace Windu, had pulled them back. Mace yanked himself out of his reverie and saw for the first time the guilt etched across Depa's face. "You did the right thing," he assured her. "As it is, the Kaminoans can no longer be allowed to oversee the Grand Army of the Republic. I will instruct Commander Thyre to take a battalion to Kamino and to seize control of all cloning facilities. All Kaminoan scientists will be relieved of their duties." Depa couldn't help but wonder what that was going to look like. Obviously, Kamino cannot be allowed to keep its seat in the Senate, and Senator Bertoni will have to be questioned to determine what, if anything, she knew. Mace was saying all this almost offhandedly, as though he could simply speak these things into being. "We may also have to consider moving our cloning operations off-world." Mace paused. "As for the chips," Depa finished his thought, "we need to find a way to remove them, or to disable them at least. No." She blinked, figuring that she'd misheard him. "No?" Mace rose. "We need to learn from the Kaminoans if there is a way of reprogramming the chips." Depa's mouth went dry. "Reprogramming?" Mace nodded. "The clones were designed to be a tool of the Sith. We must reforge them so they are a tool of the Republic. If we are to rely on them to defend democracy, then we will need a safeguard to ensure they will stand against the Republic's enemies without question, whoever they might be." Depa was resisting the urge to follow Mace's reasoning to its most foreboding conclusion, though she suspected that in doing so, she wouldn't be too far off the mark. "So you want to make our own Order 66? So that we can make the clones turn against who? Senators?" Her voice dropped a few octaves. "Jedi?" Mace's face hardened. "Depa, we almost lost everything. Look what just happened to you on Kamino. Look how quickly someone we thought was on our side turned against us. Who knows how many more Lama Sus are out there? I am not taking any chances." Why did he have to bring up Kamino again? In the back of her mind, she worried that Mace would justify every new escalation by appealing, overtly or otherwise, to what she had done. At what point would he cross the line? She had, after all, taken lives under not dissimilar logic. How great a moral gap was there, really, between her actions and what Mace was implying? Just then, a clone trooper entered the office. "General, the delegation of 2,000 to see you." He had received the request for an audience not long before Depa returned to Coruscant. "Very well, send them in." A gaggle of about a half dozen senators, among them Mon Mothma and Bail Organa, strode in. Padme Amidala was at the head of the group, ostentatiously adorned as always. Everything from her sharp gaze to her sweeping strides radiated a fierce determination. "Master Windu," Padme's eyes traveled to Depa, whom she clearly hadn't expected. "Master Balaba?" Depa stood and positioned herself to Mace's left. She wished she could have left before the senator's arrival. In private, she had the luxury of nursing misgivings. But in the arena of politics, there was no space for equivocating. Mace had made that clear. "Senators," Mace replied cordially, "how can I help you?" "We were troubled by the substance of your address to the Senate." There was no warmth in Padme's voice. This was all business. "As you're aware, the Delegation of 2000 was formed to challenge the growth of executive power under Chancellor Palpatine. With his death, and with the revelation of his true identity, we had hoped to see power return to the Senate. Instead, you promised more of the same, if not greater crackdowns on civil liberties, all in the name of going after the so-called internal enemies of the Republic." "I appreciate your concern, Senator," Mace replied. "Believe me when I say that no one wants to see a return to regular order more than I do. But until we have unraveled the full extent of the Sith conspiracy, I'm afraid that extraordinary measures will have to remain in place." "Your predecessor said much the same," she shot back. "Just a few days ago, he sat in that chair and promised to give up emergency powers as soon as the war ended." Padme locked eyes with Mace. Something tells me he had no intention of staying true to his word. The room grew colder. All pretense of diplomatic airs were stripped away. Depa could tell that Mace did not much care for being compared to Palpatine. He approached Padme, and as he did, he grew larger somehow, or at least to project his authority in a manner that he had heretofore resisted. It was as though through his physicality, he were revealing a truth about his power, that it came neither from procedure nor popular will, but rather from that most primeval place, possession of the instruments of violence. Put simply, he, Mace Windu, had the guns, and they, the senators, didn't. I am a Jedi. Each word fell like a hammer stroke. A Jedi, not a Sith. I will keep my word. Padme allowed a moment of silence to pass before replying. Perhaps she was calculating just how much more she could press Mace. Very well, Padme conceded at last. I look forward to working with you to transition the Republic back to democracy as soon as circumstances allow. It was not how she had intended to end the conversation. But Padme had been mentored by the best. Both Bail and Mon Mothma had impressed on her the art of picking one's battles. Is there any other matter your delegation wishes to discuss? Mace's eyes swept over the other senators. Speaking of picking up battles, you're holding a Jedi prisoner, Padme said. Anakin Skywalker. I request visitation so that I can make certain that his detention is in accordance with the public law. Mace turned and brushed past Depa so that he could look out at the Coruscant cityscape. It was impossible to see the planet's surface from this height. Droids had reinstalled the shattered window pane the morning after his duel with Palpatine. Even so, the precariousness was every bit as raw for Mace now as it had been that night. If Anakin had had his way, Mace would have been swallowed up by the abyss. And then what? What horrors would he and Palpatine have unleashed? But he, Mace Windu, had stopped them. Mace didn't look back at Padme. Anakin Skywalker will be executed for treason against the Republic. The color drained from Padme's face. You can't. He hasn't gone to trial. The facts haven't been laid out. You're tearing the Constitution to shreds. Bail inserted himself. Master Jedi, with all due respect, the severity of this crisis notwithstanding, there are certain rules to which we must adhere. Otherwise... At that, Mace faced the senators again. In one smooth motion, he snatched his lightsaber from his belt and held it out. Depa thought he was going to ignite it. Even the senators appeared to recoil ever so slightly. Every Jedi, when they have reached the appropriate stage in their training, is taken to the planet Ilum to retrieve their very own kyber crystal, which becomes the heart of their lightsaber. Mace wasn't saying anything that those in the room didn't already know. Where was he going with this? From an early age, we are taught to use the Force for knowledge and defense, never attack. And yet we're given a weapon. We wear it at our side nearly every waking hour. In that way, the lightsaber represents a kind of ever-present temptation. It's always right there, just within our reach. In times of great difficulty or stress, we can either adhere to our training as Jedi, or we can choose the quick and easy path. That being said, the Jedi are not sworn to pacifism. After all, using the Force for defense might in itself entail the use of a lightsaber. I myself use this lightsaber to decapitate the bounty hunter Jango Fett on Geonosis. The Jedi Code does not forbid such actions in the context of self-defense. But let's ask ourselves why. After all, the Code could have insisted that I take every action to incapacitate Jango Fett and then arrest him, or else refuse to engage with him in combat at all. The permission to take his life comes from the recognition that those who engage in aggression, by virtue of their aggression, have forfeited certain rights. When a bounty hunter is shooting at you, there's no time to schedule a trial, select a jury, gather evidence. The trappings of civilization depend on buy-in from all parties. When one party refuses to play by the rules, we can't be expected to just carry on as normal. The defense of civilization sometimes requires that we act in ways that, at first glance, may appear uncivilized. But this is no more a contradiction than a Jedi wielding a lightsaber. It is, rather, a necessary means of protecting civilization from those who wish to destroy it. Mace was gripping the hilt of his lightsaber by his thumb and forefinger now, so that it bobbed ever so slightly. A lightsaber can be used justly, as in the cause of self-defense, or unjustly, out of fear, anger, hatred. The difference comes down not to the weapon, but to its wielder. We have to remain guided by our virtues at all times. Otherwise, we become the very threat that we are trying to destroy. But we cannot be so narrow-minded and short-sighted that we give our enemies the chance to achieve victory. It is, as the Jedi always teach, a matter of balance. Mace hooked his lightsaber back to his belt. And that, Senators, is why Anakin Skywalker must die. There was so much more that Padme wanted to say, but it was clear the more Mace was pushed, the more fervent he grew. Deppa sensed an emotion radiating from the Naboo senator that she did not expect. Was that heartache? It was as if... Without another word, she and the other members of the delegation departed, Padme marching so ferociously that she ended up several paces ahead of the other senators. Deppa waited until they were out of earshot to speak. When did you make that decision? Just now. It turned out that Mace had been wrong to doubt himself. Anakin was a Shatterpoint, but not the kind that Mace had believed at first. Anakin Skywalker was going to usher in a new age of the Republic. Not through his life, but through his death. Anakin knelt before the Great Tree, which marked the heart of a courtyard at the base of the High Council Tower, the central spire of the Jedi Temple. Anakin briefly dueled Barriss Offee here, after learning that she had perpetrated the bombing of the temple. His hands were bound behind his back. Two Jedi Temple guards stood on either side of him, while six clone troopers lined up several feet in front of him, blaster rifles at their sides. There were even more clones stationed all along the perimeter of the courtyard. A small group of Jedi had gathered to watch, chatting in hushed tones amongst themselves. A hover cam was taking it all in. Mace and Deppa entered the courtyard, accompanied by a clone escort. The Jedi audience fell silent. Mace stepped in front of Anakin. On your feet, Skywalker. Anakin did as instructed. His hair fell over his face. He kept his head bowed, refusing to meet Mace's gaze. Mace turned to address the assembled and the holocam. Anakin Skywalker, the hero with no fear, the chosen one, and now, traitor to the Republic. Anakin Skywalker sought to aid the Sith Lord Darth Sidious in his scheme to destroy the Republic. He tried to take my life, and very nearly succeeded. And for his crimes, he will now forfeit his life. To those who doubt our resolve, I hope you're watching, because this is the lengths to which we will go to safeguard our democracy. He pointed a declarative finger at Anakin. It doesn't matter if you're a war hero, or if you're destined to bring balance to the Force. If you conspire against the Republic, we will stop you. Yet we are gathered here, in the shadow of the Great Tree, as a reminder of the oaths we have taken, and the code to which we have devoted our lives. We will not forsake them. Mace and Deppa stepped out of the line of fire, along with the temple guards. Troopers, Mace's voice boomed. On my mark. The clones raised their rifles, training them on Anakin's chest. Phew! Deppa heard it before she saw it. One of the temple guards had ignited their saber and held it to Mace's throat. The clones immediately turned away from Anakin and took aim at the guard. Master Windu, stop this madness! A familiar voice. The guard removed their mask. Mace smirked. Master Kenobi. At that, two Jedi leapt out from among the assembly. Yoda and Ahsoka Tano landed on either end of the line of clone troopers, lightsabers ablaze. The clones are now divided, with some still fixated on Obi-Wan, but others ready to fire on Yoda or Ahsoka. I should have expected no less from the three of you, Mace scoffed. Allow this, we cannot, Yoda declared. Destroy the very foundations of the Republic and the Jedi, you will, if down this path you go. You are weak, Mace spat. You weren't there. You didn't see what I saw. It's because of Jedi like you that Darth Sidious almost won. If you had your way, we would go back to business as usual, only for another Sith Lord to rise up in 10 or 20 years' time. Ahsoka looked to Deppa. Master Balaba, you know this isn't right. What Master Windu wants will only lead to more chaos and instability. Help us put a stop to this. They don't have what it takes, Mace insisted. You and I together can make sure the Republic is still here for future generations. The fates of trillions are on the line. Do you want to go back to trusting the same people who let us down the first time? Deppa's eyes scanned the clone troopers. She could utter those three words and let the clones take out her, Mace, and every Jedi in the temple. It was a possibility that none of them had entertained. Perhaps it had been the will of the Force that the Sith win and the Jedi die. And everything that had unfolded since Palpatine's death was actually some great deviation for which they would all, in time, suffer retribution. Perhaps hers had already come back on Kamino. Mace had made a big show of executing Anakin in front of the Great Tree to prove that, however radical their actions appeared, they were still being guided by the Force. But in truth, every time Depa shut out the world and listened for the Force, she heard nothing. Dipa-Balaba took out her lightsaber. She strode, taking deliberately large steps, over to Anakin. The courtyard was so still that she couldn't even hear a breath. She stopped behind Anakin and activated her lightsaber. She touched the tip of her blade to Anakin's binders. She closed her eyes and listened for the Force one more time. Mace felt it. A shift, as abrupt and ferocious as a gust of wind signaling an approaching storm. Dipa-Balaba was now the shatter point. Vroom, ksh! Anakin Skywalker's head tumbled to the courtyard. The cut was so clean that his body actually remained upright for a few seconds. One of the assembled Jedi let out a shriek. Dipa-Balaba locked eyes with Mace Windu. For the Republic. And that, dear listeners, is the end of the third speculative Star Wars story. I hope you enjoyed that. I am planning, it is very much my intention, to make this now a more regular thing. This was a story concept and idea that I'd been batting around in my head for a long time that I wanted to do, and then eventually I decided I'm just going to have to buckle down and do it, because that's the only way it's going to get done. So I'm very glad I could finally realize the story and deliver it to you, and I hope you enjoyed it. My original goal when I started Speculative Star Wars, that it was going to become a kind of seasonal thing, that there was going to be one episode that was during the summer, and then there was going to be a fall episode, and then a winter episode, and then, of course, as I mentioned at the top of the show, that kind of fell apart because life, but now that I am kind of recommitting to this, I think I might do that again. So this is going to be the fall episode, and then come the winter months, I will return with the fourth story. But yes, I hope you enjoyed all of that. So, what to expect on the next episode? Episode 43 will drop on October 3rd. And folks, this is going to be a very special one. I am very, very excited for this episode. So, back in August of 2022, a historian based out of the UK named Chris Kempschel published a book called The History and Politics of Star Wars, Death Stars and Democracy, where he pretty much looks at various events and characters in Star Wars through a historical lens. And naturally, me being who I am with my background and the sort of stuff that I've done on this show, I was intrigued by his book, by the premise, and I knew I had to get him on the show. I had to have him on to have a conversation. And I was able to do that, and not just him. So on the next episode, I will be joined by Chris Kempschel, the author of The History and Politics of Star Wars, Death Stars and Democracy. And I will be joined by Vaughn Joy. Vaughn Joy is the co-host of a relatively new, at the time of this recording, Star Wars podcast called The Joy of Star Wars, which is a podcast that talks about Star Wars through the lens of American history. And the three of us are pretty much going to have a conversation about the intersection of Star Wars and history and making Star Wars content as people who have backgrounds in history. So I am super, super stoked to have this episode coming out. This is, I just know even now at the time that this is coming out, at the time that I'm recording this, I have not yet actually sat down to record with Chris and Vaughn, but I know that this is going to be undoubtedly one of the most important episodes of the show that I have done so far. So do make sure to tune in for that one. It is going to be a fantastic conversation. I have zero doubt about that. Until then, make sure you're subscribed to the show. Please rate and review the show if you're able to do so. If you're not already following the show on Twitter, you can do so at A Larger View Pod. And until next time, look for the Force, and you will always find it.